Well, I wonder what you're hoping for this week. Maybe it's something simple. Maybe it's something as simple as getting a seat on the train as you travel to work tomorrow. Maybe it's hoping that that first class stamp you've put on your father's late birthday card gets there on the day of his birthday. Maybe you're hoping for something more significant, hoping your child won't be bullied at school this week. And maybe you're hoping for a good result from the doctor when you go to hear the result of your tests. Maybe you're hoping that your friend that you've fallen out with will agree to meet with you so that you might be reconciled. All of us are hoping for something, hoping for many things. We look ahead and we project our lives into the future, a week, a year, a decade, the idea of how we'd like them to be, hoping for the outcomes that we'd like. I read something by Paul Tripp this week, the Christian preacher and writer and blogger. He says there are three elements to hope: assessments, objects, and expectations. So assessments, what he says is that we look around and assess something or someone that could be better. If we were satisfied with how things were, then we wouldn't need hope. We assess. Secondly, we have an object of our hopes. Hope is never abstract. Hope is never in the vacuum. So we say, I hope I win the lottery. I hope I get better. We're wanting someone or something to fix what is broken or not good or to deliver what we desire. Assessments, objects, and expectations. We have expectations of what our hopes will deliver. It may be that we hope that we will be delivered a financial windfall. We hope that, or expect that, our health will be restored. And sometimes our expectations are realized, but other times they're not fulfilled because we've actually had unrealistic hopes. I guess one universal assessment felt by everyone at some stage, sometimes prolonged and unending, is when we suffer. It's an easy assessment, isn't it? We want an end to our suffering. We don't want it to continue. We hope for a life free of pain and suffering. We hope for relief from suffering when it comes. Well, here's what Paul says. The verses we're going to concentrate on today as we think about hope. He's speaking to Christians about the experience of being a Christian, a follower of Jesus. And I just want to reread verses 23 to 25, which are the verses that we're going to concentrate on. Not only so, but we ourselves who have the first fruits of the Spirit groan inwardly as we wait eagerly for our adoption as sons, the redemption of our bodies. For in this hope we were saved. But hope that is seen is no hope at all. Who hopes for what he already has? But if we hope for what we do not yet have, we wait for it patiently. There's a sermon outline, as Ben said, on the yellow sheet. The Christian experience is firstly groaning inwardly. Christian experience is firstly groaning inwardly. Verse 22, if you cast your mind back or eye back, says the whole creation has been groaning. And everyone and everything experiences what he calls frustration in verse 20, or sometimes translated futility. Earthquakes, floods, famines, disease, sickness, brokenness, broken bodies, broken minds, broken relationships. No place, no person anywhere is not groaning, where suffering is not experienced. It's the reality of the world in which we live. And we're given an explanation as to why this is here in verse 20. For the creation was subjected to futility, not by its own choice, but by the will of the one who subjected it. In other words, it's no accident that there is futility, decay, disease, and suffering. The world has been subjected to it by God. We'd have to go back to Genesis chapter 3 to understand this. Genesis 1 and 2, God creates everything good, very good. And he set us in his world as his image bearers, to be like him. And for our good, God says in Genesis 2, you're free to eat from any tree in the garden, but you must not eat from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. For when you eat of it, you will certainly die. And what do Adam and Eve do in Genesis chapter 3? They doubt God's word. They doubt God's good purposes for men and women. They rebel against him and take things into their own hands. And what follows is God's judgment. And that is what we see in the world around. The broken world, the broken relationships, pain and suffering. And no one or no thing exempt from that brokenness. And we know, don't we? We experience it in our bodies. We get sick. Our hair falls out. We lose strength. We die. We experience it in our relationships. For sin, which is that rebellion against God, sin separates. Sin spoils. Its ravages are felt everywhere. The whole creation has been groaning. Verse 23, not only so, but we ourselves, he's speaking here of Christians, we're not exempt from that. We groan inwardly. I'm sure some of you are feeling that acutely this morning. Sometimes we know that groaning is public. Tears that flow from the death of a loved family or friend. Sometimes, of course, that inner groaning is very private, a great personal hurt that we're carrying. Or maybe we're being damaged by abuse, whether it's physical or verbal, or maybe the legacy of that remains with us down the years. Or there's that deep ache of personal loneliness and isolation. And in such suffering, we cry out, no more, no more tears, no more pain. It shouldn't be like this. We long for it to end. We hope for something better. And Romans 8 tells us there is hope, which is what we're thinking about this morning. We see and experience God's curse on sin in our suffering, but notice verse 20, God subjected it, his judgment was there, but in hope. God subjected it in hope. In hope, the creation itself will be liberated from its bondage to decay. It's saying it won't always be like this. There's freedom, there's liberation, there's glory coming. Spring gives us a picture of hope, doesn't it? Outside our bedroom window at home, we sort of look straight into a tree, which I have to keep cutting off because it keeps sort of getting closer and closer to the house. It's a catalpa tree, and at this time of year, it's one of the last trees to come into leaf. It still looks dead in its winter barrenness, and you wonder if there is life there. And then you just start to see the first buds begin to break. You know that the God of creation has brought the seasons. You know that the winter is going to be followed by spring. And spring, in a sense, gives us hope. It's a hopeful season, isn't it? That the darkness and deadness and death of winter is not the last thing. It's not the end story. There is hope coming. And that's true for all who trust in Jesus too. Verse 18 puts it like this. He compares or contrasts. In fact, well, he says it's not worth comparing. I consider our present sufferings are not worth comparing with the glory that will be revealed in us. And that's because what we experience now is just out of proportion to what we will experience. The pattern of the Christian life is suffering now, glory to come. Suffering now, glory to come. A glory that outstrips and is far superior than any present suffering, however intense that might be. And verse 23 picks this up. We groan inwardly as we wait eagerly for our adoption to sonship, the redemption of our bodies. For in this hope, we were saved. So let's think secondly then about the Christian experience of waiting eagerly. We've thought about groaning inwardly. Now I want to think about waiting eagerly, waiting eagerly. What happens when we come to trust Jesus is that we become children of God. We're adopted into his family, as he says in verses 14 and 16. Our status now is his children. Before, we were not his children. Now, through faith in Jesus Christ, by grace, we are his children. But we have to say we don't fully see this. We're still looking forward, verse 23. We have been adopted at the moment we trust in Jesus, but we don't see this, and we won't see it until the new creation, when we'll be with Jesus. You could put it like this: there's an already, but a not yet. There's a tension there, isn't there? Imagine you're adopting a child today. Lots of interviews, meetings with social workers, other agencies. You meet the child, the adoption is agreed, you sign the papers, they are legally adopted into your family. That's already happened. But there may be a delay of a few days before the child actually comes to live with you. There's a waiting between the already and the not yet. And it's an eager waiting. It's full of anticipation. It's full of excitement. Something you've been planning and working to for months, sometimes years. Now you're nearly there. It's a sort of same idea, isn't it, of a child waiting for Christmas Day to arrive. All the getting ready, the wrapping of presents, the Christmas decorations in the shops at home, the excitement mounting. I remember one year a child of ours, I can't even remember which one it was, bursting into our bedroom saying, "Christmas is here, it's Christmas Day." And we had to say, "Well, not quite yet. There's another 3 or 4 days to go." You've experienced that. "Oh, but I can't bear the waiting." You know, there's that eager anticipation, isn't there? Something they're looking forward to that they just want to arrive. Well, he says here, we wait eagerly for our adoption to sonship, the redemption of our bodies. Two things: adoption of sonship, that I've been talking about, that the redemption of our bodies, similarly with those. They are already redeemed. We have been bought. Jesus has paid the penalty for our sin. His Spirit dwells within us and gives us spiritual life. Yet our mortal bodies sin. The penalty may have been paid, but the presence of sin remains. There's an already, but not yet. And this is why he says in verse 24, "For in this hope," that is the hope of adoption to sonship and redemption of our bodies, "in this hope we were saved." Hope, because it's future. We have been saved, we were saved, and we will be saved. It's yet to be fully seen, and it's what we're hoping for. If we had it already, if we were with Jesus, if our bodies were free from decay and futility and sin, there would be no hope. We'd have what we're waiting for eagerly. It's why he says, "Who hopes for what they already have?" Now, I think there are dangers for those who follow Jesus. I don't often find Christians waiting eagerly for our adoption to sonship, the redemption of our bodies. I think sometimes this is because we often in life have a life free of suffering. There is an illusion that we can have heaven on earth. And our hopes and dreams are earthly and not heavenly. The objects, going back to Paul Tripp's elements of hope, we hope for a satisfying job, happy family relationships, financial security, good health, retirement, a life of ease. And yet we find our hopes don't deliver. Work is hard and not satisfying. Deep family troubles remain. Finances seem to run through our fingers. Our health suddenly breaks down. The lie the world sells is you can have it all now. And we believe the lie. We live for the lie. We look for hope horizontally. We look for hope horizontally in our possessions, in our experiences, in our relationships. And they may provide some pleasure and satisfaction. Sometimes our hopes might be realized, but it doesn't last. And we soon find, don't we, that we're disappointed by the person we had hoped in. That dream holiday or dream home doesn't turn out to be quite such a dream that we'd hoped for. We waited eagerly, but they didn't deliver, because we forget they can't deliver. The people or things that we're looking to suffer the same degree of brokenness as we do. And that's why it's essential to have this clear biblical worldview that the whole creation has been subjected to futility. The pattern is suffering now and glory to come. Consider Jesus, who for the joy set before him, endured the cross. He didn't see glory now. Presently, he was suffering. I'm sure he wanted glory now, which is what we want. But he anticipates glory in the future, the joy set before him, which comforts, helps him in his groaning of suffering, to wait eagerly even. As Romans says, our present sufferings are not worth comparing with the glory that will be revealed in us. Or take the promises of Revelation 21 for those who are children of God, when God will wipe away every tear, when there will be no more death or mourning or crying or pain. No wonder the cry at the end of Revelation is, come, Lord Jesus. We're eagerly awaiting that day to come because it's a glorious prospect. The object of hope isn't horizontal here. It isn't in situations and stuff and experiences. The object of hope is vertical. It is in Jesus Christ. It is in the promises of his word, the truth of the resurrection, the truth that he is alive. It's a sure and certain hope, which holds the future in the present, and it is anchored in the past, in the reality of his death and resurrection. Groaning inwardly, waiting eagerly, and finally, living hopefully. My father is 95. He has a full-time carer. His mobility is poor. His eyesight is fading. His hearing is getting more problematic. And that's just what he tells me. When I ask him how he is, he sometimes says, you don't want to know. Where do I start? His body is packing up. And that's frustrating for someone who's loved reading and writing, who's loved conversation and engaging with people all his life. But what do I notice? He never complains. He is patient in the discomfort of old age. We've talked of dying. He's ready. He's sometimes wondered to me why the Lord is not bringing him to his heavenly home with him. There are frustrations and pain for him, but he's trusting that God knows best. His times are in his hands. He is hoping for the redemption of his body. He doesn't yet have that. That lies in the future. He is waiting patiently. He is living hopefully. Verse 25, but if we hope for what we do not yet have, we wait for it patiently. See, what is his hope doing? What does our hope in Christ do? It anticipates the future. It anticipates the day when sin will be done with. That is a day I look forward to. As you think about the sin in your life and the sin of others towards you, there is a day coming when that will be dealt with. Suffering no more. Far more, it anticipates glory. Life with God the Father and Jesus the Son, a glorious resurrection life. And what it's doing is it's pulling that future into the present. And as it does so, it sustains present sufferings. It doesn't make them any less, but it changes our hearts towards them. It enables the Apostle Paul to say elsewhere, we don't lose heart, though outwardly we are wasting away, yet inwardly we're being renewed day by day. For our light and momentary troubles are achieving for us an eternal glory that outweighs them all. Hope anticipates the future, it sustains in the present, and it perseveres in the midst of trials patiently. That's the fruit of hope, if you like. It's what hope produces, patient waiting. And how we need that in suffering, don't we? we're naturally impatient. We want it over. We want it ended. We can't stand it anymore. Well, Jesus knew better than anyone the challenge to persevere in suffering. In the Garden of Gethsemane, about to take the sin of the world on his shoulders, approaching the cross, approaching the wrath of his Father. Father, if you're willing, take this cup from me. Yet not my will, but yours be done. Persevering in the midst of agonizing suffering and trials, waiting patiently, living hopefully. So what are you hoping for? What are your expectations? Are they just wishful thinking? Is it a sure and certain hope? If we direct our thinking horizontally, if the object of our hope is people or stuff or circumstances changing, we'll find our hopes disappointed and dashed. If we've given up hope, if we're finding we're becoming cynical of human nature, negative outlook in the midst of hardship, a hopeless, despairing outlook, think again, look again, listen again, maybe for the first time to Jesus, in whom there is hope, real, sure, and certain hope, the hope of forgiveness of sins, the hope of life with him beyond the grave. When, as we're going to sing, as the musicians come forward, because there's a great song we're going to sing in response.